because you're jumping back into the gap. I'll let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebounding.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind basketballimmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. Excited to welcome Randy Brown to the podcast. Randy has been an online presence for quite some time and a speaker, an author, and a mentor, and in particular a mentor to so many coaches throughout the world in terms of helping them formulate their strategies in coaching and to be able to move forward in the profession as well. And Randy's a former NCAA Division I head coach and assistant coach, and I know he's got a tremendous background and some tremendous life lessons that are some hard lessons as well, and some things that, you know, I definitely encourage you to dig deeper into Randy's past and look at for yourself. But we're not going to get into those as much here, Randy. We're going to talk about the present and some of your thoughts on coaching. So first off, welcome to the podcast.
Chris, thanks so much. I am a big fan of yours and the way you share the game and what you stand for. And just thrilled when you contacted me and said, hey, let's have a conversation on basketball. So pleased to be here.
Well, I know coaches will get a lot out of it. And, you know, in these podcasts, I mean, I've been so blessed to have so many guests be very honest, open about technical, tactical, and philosophical ideas. And today, I know we're going to cross all three of those a little bit, but with a big focus on what you call your anchors in coaching. And you sent me a preliminary list. I know this is going to be good stuff for coaches, but explain to us first what an anchor is for you in coaching.
Well, I'm a believer that there is so much information out there, which is, number one, a blessing, number two, a hindrance to coaches, because coaches are enamored, most of them, by information. They want more and new and the latest thing. Well, that's great, but I sort of look at it, Chris, like a funnel, and everything that's available out there goes into the top of that funnel. What comes out on the bottom is truly individually what we stand for as coaches. And I think that's the way we have to look at it, because it's kind of the curse of the young coach to start out, because they really want to do everything. They want to be great at every aspect of the game. And when I get a hold of them, I try to deprogram them to, what are the anchors? What do you stand for? What are the things that you think lead most to winning? And organize your thoughts and your coaching around that. And we, because of this, we're just inundated with information. It can really be confusing, and not just for young coaches, but for all coaches. So when I speak of anchors, I'm speaking of bigger things, of taking the game and actually simplifying the game, but turning a thought or belief into what I call an anchor, which is a big, major, profound part of our philosophy.
Right. And, you know, it's a foundation, I guess, that you start with and you come back to in those moments that you need to come back to ground yourself or to get back to what you really believe in as a coach.
Absolutely.
Coach, give us an idea. So in developing these anchors, I mean, you've had tremendous experiences in coaching. I haven't coached with so many different coaches, but just quickly paint a picture of some of the coaches that you've worked with and, you know, where you were a head coach as well. So coaches get an idea of where these anchors are coming from.
I'll tell you what, I have been blessed beyond belief. I was mentored by four or five just Hall of Fame Iowa high school basketball coaches when I came up as a young guy. And that was my foundation. Went to school at the University of Iowa when Lute Olson was the coach there and got to know Coach Olson and his staff, and then ended up working for Lute at the University of Arizona as a graduate assistant. So that truly became, that was my first job and truly became the foundation of all of my coaching. And Coach Olson being a Naismith Hall of Fame coach, I just can't speak enough about the opportunity he gave me and what a thrill. It was like being in a laboratory every day with one of the greatest that's ever coached the game. And then, you know, from there, because I was on a search to become a Division I head coach, I made a lot of quick jumps around Gary Garner at Drake and Rich Glass at the University of North Dakota, Kevin O'Neill at Marquette. I was with former Indiana assistant Joby Wright at Miami of Ohio, Dan Hipsher at Stetson, and then ended up befriending Tim Floyd. And that worked into a position at Iowa State with Larry Stacey and a tremendous run. So if you throw all those guys together, I mean, it is amazing. And I tell kids when I instruct them and I tell coaches when I speak to them that I'm not coming to you with the way. I'm just coming to you with my way of what I've learned from other people. And that's really what it is, right? I mean, we are a combination of the people we've been with and what we've picked up and what we truly believe in the game. But boy, you take that group, it's amazing. And fortunately for me, honestly, there's a real defensive influence in all of those guys if you throw them all together. And I was blessed there because that's where my beliefs are in the game. And so I learned from the best.
Well, no, that's great. And obviously great background in terms of all the different coaches and the experiences. And ultimately, that's what shapes us, learning what we like, we're learning what we don't like, and equally important are both. And this has led to you, these anchors, and I believe we have 12 of them, Coach. So let's start with the first anchor, and then we'll keep going from there, and we'll discuss a little bit as we go through.
Okay, great. Well, 90%, Chris, is really one of the things I talk about probably the most. And it's just that concept of the game. And I'm shocked when I go out and talk to players just about how they see the game. And I'm also equally as disturbed at times when I walk into gyms and all I see is shots being taken and ball handling drills. And as much as those are important parts of the game, I guess it's my calling, if you would, to really take a serious stance on what about the other 90%? And you and I had a brief conversation on this before, but 90% comes from the fact that a high school player is just going to take maybe a half a dozen shots. And they're not going to have the ball in their hands very much. And if the studies indicate that it's around 90%, some people will tell me 95%. And so if that's true, my analogy, Chris, comes from golf. And that would be all a player does is get out the sexiest club in the bag, which is the driver, right? Which is the same in basketball as hitting the three ball. And they get the driver out and they do nothing but pound drivers on the driving range. And they don't work on any other part of the game. And the driver really is symbolic of having the ball in your hand in basketball. Well, that's great. And it looks good. And you can bomb a 300-yard drive. The problem is when you're 110 yards away and you got sand traps and you got a slanted green and, you know, how to nestle that ball in there with a wedge or a nine iron, let's say. And it can't be done unless it's worked on. And they have to understand how important the rest of that game of golf, how to use those other clubs, what is the mentality you use when you're not hitting the driver. And I love that analogy. I think it's the same for basketball. And if we don't, I think we're doing an injustice to kids if we're not teaching the rest of the game.
And to focus on that, I mean, what we're essentially saying is that playing off the ball and learning how to play off the ball is such a huge part of the game. And I heard Steve Nash say this on another podcast, and he said to empower the weak side, which is a concept that I think for us as coaches, especially when we're considering the levels that many coaches are coaching at, including mine, it's that we do want to empower more players to play and to empower more players to have a better experience.
Yeah.
Using this 90% concept will help us do that because they'll feel more engaged and more involved in the game, especially on offense.
Without a question. Just a couple quick thoughts. The philosophy also is not just offense, okay, but it goes to defense because how much of the time are you actually guarding the ball? Not very much. So it's the same. It's just a mirror of offense. And all of a sudden you take a high school game of 32 minutes and there's a lot of time you don't have the ball. So you're either a player away from the ball or you're not a player away from the ball. And we know how that works out in terms of playing time. And you know, the other thing having to do with that, Chris, is just the fact that players need to understand where they're good, where they're valuable, where they bring the greatest impact to their team. And we use the word embrace, but embrace that. And I know, again, that's not the thing that they want sometimes. It certainly, most of the time, isn't what their parents want. But it's a team game. And I always tell kids, hey, you don't like it, just go play tennis. You don't have to worry about the weak side in tennis. You just go play. It's all about you. And I truly believe, and I do this with players all the time, and I do this with coaches. I'll talk about it this weekend at a clinic in Indiana I'm speaking to. And I'll ask, how many of you watch the ball? When you watch a game, how many of you watch the basketball moved around the perimeter? And, you know, if everybody's being honest, it's going to be most of them, and certainly all players. Well, the reason I ask that is because I say that the action isn't on the ball. I mean, that's pretty easy. One guy's a ball, one guy's guarding him. Eliminate that. You don't need to watch it because you know where it is anyway. There's a tremendous 4-on-4 game going on other than the ball and the defender. And that is the game because the next pass is going to come from that 4-on-4 action.
Right. And this is a process. It's an anchor for a coach to understand that, but yeah. It's such an important process to educate your players about too.
Oh, and
I don't know how much time we spend talking on that concept with our players, but so important that they understand that their value off the ball on offense and defense. And this leads into your second anchor, of course, which is communication and that process of communicating. So can you talk a little bit about why this is one of your anchors?
It just is one of the things. And what's so neat for me about not having a team, because I'm a no team coach right now, you know, I'm a no team teacher, and I can step back and observe things I probably couldn't have observed before. Well, one of the things I have learned from just watching is that from the bench, there will be instructions about we need to talk, we need to communicate. And I love to ask coaches, hey, what's the number one thing your team doesn't do well? And almost invariably, they'll say communication. My follow-up question, because I don't work with offenses and defenses anymore, which is really neat. I work with things like, you know, feet, eyes, the why, the process of the game and that type of thing. And I'll ask coaches, how much time this week did you work on breaking down your skill of communication as a team? In other words, we teach shooting, we teach defensive transition. Are we teaching communication? And if you really think about that, here's what I've learned. We're not teaching it. We're just telling players to communicate. That would be like not coaching defense and just telling your players to defend.
So how do we do it, coach? I mean, that's the question. Yeah. Give us some actionable items.
Absolutely. And so I have it down into 4 items when I teach. And it's early. Early means the communication must come early. And they'll say, well, what's communication? Communication to me in basketball is any piece of information that you're aware of that can benefit your team. Now, because there's a lot of stuff that we say on the floor that doesn't mean anything, okay? And it needs to be, you know, intelligent, you know, really information with some substance to it. But, and it needs to be said early, okay? Because if you know something about that you know or you see that can help your team and you don't say it, what are you really saying? I don't want to win. I don't want to tell my team how to stop, you know, get a stop in this possession. What am I really doing? It's selfish is what it is. So when I see something happening or anticipate it's going to happen early, I have to talk. We can't talk right at the point of the ball screen. We have to talk early. And then we talk about what? Well, what is it? Is it a back screen? Is it a screen coming on an on-ball screen from the left side? Because that's the next one, directional. So we talk about what is it, and directionally, where is it coming from if that's necessary? Now, back screen is coming from behind. We know that. So maybe back screen covers that. But like an on-ball screen, you know, it's got to be right or left. Every point on the floor needs a what, and it needs a direction most of the time. And then the last part, Chris, so early, what, directional, the last part is the most important part, is the action. okay, you gave me this information early. Okay, now what do I do with it? If you say, hey, screen coming, screen coming, screen coming, screen coming left. It's early. It's what? It's directional. And then if I don't make an action out of it, in other words, are we going to switch? Are we going to hedge and recover? Are we going to go under? What is the ultimate action going to be? Because that is going to equal execution. All the talk is great. But if there's not an action at the end followed through by the two people that are communicating or the team that is communicating. So, you know, idea or word of laboratory before. So when I get out on the floor now, it is a ball because I can take things that I never either had a chance or even didn't realize before when I was coaching. And actually, I'm working on, hey, how does this work? What do you guys understand about communication? It's a great question to ask them. And they're usually pretty clueless. And then we teach. So I teach out of those four. And then I watch very carefully to see if they can carry that over into what we do, maybe the rest of that workout or a workout a week from then. But I think it's good. The guys have embraced it. They like it. And that to me would be a coach who is saying we don't communicate well. And I've taught it to the best of my ability. Now I expect accountability.
Right. And that's key too. I mean, what you're saying is that, you know, in the parallel to what you gave the example of defense is that to say we want to play defense and then not coach defense doesn't make a lot of sense. So I like that analogy. And obviously following things with action is so important. And I guess, again, like these anchors seem to lead into each other, which is perfect for a podcast coach. But to lead into the next part, which is teaching basketball is seen as a puzzle, not a series of drills, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and this concept, and that's really what solving a communication issue for your team is. It's a bit of a puzzle. And even though everyone knows it's something that's important, it's not necessarily something that's done without, as you said, coaching and making sure there's action. So let's get into this puzzle.
Right. And let me piggyback one quick thing on communication. I am shocked at how meek players' voices are. It's unbelievable. I mean, from the college level on down. And I challenge my guys. And then I ask them, I say, how loud does your voice have to be? It's got to be louder than the environment in the gym. Because if it's not, your teammate's not going to hear you. Well, I can't believe how meek these guys are with their voice. And so we'll actually stand there. This sounds crazy, but we'll stand there and I'll point to a guy and I'll say, I want you to yell screen right as loud as you can. And some of them can't even scream. I'm shocked. And I go, no wonder, you know, we're running into screens during the game in a fairly loud gym.
Well, and it's interesting because I find practice communication at most levels is far beyond game communication.
Yes.
Right? Generally, again, our guys are real good communicating within a practice environment, but where some of them don't transfer it, and that's the goal of everything that I try to do is to get them to transfer it to competition, because it doesn't mean as much in practice as it does in the game, although clearly it helps your energy in practice, helps your ability to defend in practice, but really where you really need it is during those unpredictable moments.
Yeah,
so that's ultimately this puzzle is trying to get it to transfer.
Well, it is, and I've gained so much out of talking to players. And I guess I never really did that before. One of the biggest mistakes I really believe that I made was that I was coaching and teaching out of the concept of what I knew. And what I know is of really not much consequence. What is really the most important thing is what my players get. And we say that. Now, do you understand? Do you get it? You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Well, that yes, no question is a terrible question because they're all going to say, yes, I get it. And I wrote an article called Coach Through Your Player's Eyes. And it's frightening sometimes if you think about it in those terms, but you have to because they don't, what you know, you can go to all the clinics you want. It doesn't matter. Can you get that across to your kids? And that's to me what pieces of the puzzle are. I asked a young guy last spring, I said, tell me how your practices are put together. It kind of tell me what happens. He goes, well, we warm up and then we usually do some ball handling and then we do this drill and we do that drill and a series of drills. And I counted like, you know, 8 or 9 of them. And then we have a game the next day and we play the game. And I said, okay, tell me about those 8 drills. Well, I said, were they the same? What were they like? He goes, well, they're all kind of different. He said, you know, one time we would do a defensive transition, and the next time we'd be working on throwing it into the post and spotting up. And, you know, we take a break and then we come back out and we would work on splitting double teams if we faced a press. And then we worked on some footwork stuff. And I could see this kid's, his head is spinning. And I said, collectively, all those drills, did they mean much to you? I know individually you were explained to you what they were, but as a group of the eight, did they fit together? If this was a puzzle, would they actually pieces fit together? And he goes, no, they're like eight different things. And he actually told me this. And I thought to myself, what would it be like to be this kid and try to play with his coach, assuming that he understood how all the game, you know, all the pieces of the game fit together and how the game was supposed to go? Oh my gosh. And so I was actually in a 1 month defensive program with about 25 high school players. And it was a great laboratory for me to be able to break down defensive basketball into parts and then teach them how parts work together. Because if you run your defensive transition and then you run your shell drill, okay, in between, they have to understand how those two morph together. Because they do. I mean, that's the game right there. If they treat them as separate drills, I'm not sure they understand how to play. And boy, that was an eye-opener to me. So yeah, that would be my best example, Chris, on what pieces of the puzzle are like. And the other thing I tell them is, have you ever put a puzzle together and you have about 10% of the pieces where they need to be? And can you tell what it is? In other words, do you see the game? And they say, well, no, you know, not until pretty much half or three quarters of the pieces are in, do I really start to see that it's a picture of a lake and there's a dock and there's a boat. Okay. Now, if you get enough of the pieces put together, do you begin to see the picture clear? Oh yeah. Yeah, much clearer. And then I knew I had something.
Right. Well, and again, I mean, what you say makes sense. And the concept of the puzzle, I think, is a great analogy for coaches. And that's really what these anchors are, is wonderful things to be able to reflect back to as a coach and say, do my drills or my activities in practice bring the picture closer together, or do they move it farther apart? And you know, I'm a big believer in connecting ideas and making sure that whatever drill you do, I mean, the drill is just a prelude to a game-based,
sure,
you know, small side game or 5-on-5 or whatever it is. And with this year's team, for example, we are using a few more what coaches would deem as drills, using them simply to connect an idea back to something that our young players, we have 9 newcomers.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to connect that idea back. So if we do something like sprint to the ball, jump to the ball, whatever phrase you want to use,
right,
in a drill, immediately when we get back in the game and practice situations, we're trying to bring that puzzle together, as you say.
Yes.
Because we're saying, hey, listen, connect that drill to this game, because you did in the drill, but what matters are you doing it now and making these ideas connect. And it's a great analogy.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. The next one is words. And listening to coaches, it's really interesting. And I like to, whether I'm, you know, watching Texas and Iowa State, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to get close enough to the floor, and West Virginia and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, and because I live in Ames, Iowa, I'm right here. So, and high school games and all kinds of different settings. And I listen to words that coaches are using, because that's what kids hear. They hear our words. What do the words mean? And so I challenge coaches to have a list of terminology, and I'm pretty surprised at how many don't. Well, we just kind of, you know, my assistants kind of know what I'm talking about when I use this word and that word. I don't think that's good, because I remember as a young high school coach, I used the word screen, okay? And I used the word screen once, and I used the word, there's another word for screen, I can't come up with it, but I used two words.
Pick.
There you go. Yeah. I used those. And the player came to me really frustrated, and he goes, I don't know what you want. One time he said set a pick, and one time he said set a screen. But knocked me over. And so I learned that early. And it's so true, because I think we need consistent terminology. Offense, defense, intangible. We come up with some kind of crazy words, all of us, for a concept or a drill or whatever. I think that's fine. But I always challenge coaches to, let's be consistent with our words so our coaches know and our kids know. And the best way to find out is just to quiz your players. Describe this for me. What is it? And I'm big on giving quizzes too. I love giving quizzes to players. It's awesome. you find out a lot.
And again, so many programs, and connection I make with words is, words are your culture. Like ultimately how you speak every day within practice, and you practice way more than you play, that these words that you use in practice are, that's your culture. And if one of our players is speaking one of our words, then I will constantly point out to them, yes, that's our culture. That's our culture. That's our culture. Right. So they understand our culture. And you're right. I mean, how many coaches actually have that list written down and visible and all those different things that go with it? And that is the practical thing you're saying, is that you should actually have that written down.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the most abused word by coaches is the word toughness. Another challenge I have for coaches is to write down their definition of toughness. Because if we go out and use that word in a practice, in a film session, and then eventually in a game where everybody can hear that word, okay, that if he doesn't know, you know, kids think if they knock somebody down, they're being tough, you know, and I love when a kid dives for a loose ball and people, you know, they compliment them and they think that's toughness. No, that's just a hustle play. I have 45 rules for toughness. I've broken it down that much. And I ran a camp for several summers for college players called Tough U. And really, they're all mentally based rules for toughness. Because to me, an example would be, do you run out of the game with the same speed that you run into the game? That's an example of one of the 45.
Well, and as you said, I mean, reaction is not toughness. It's toughness is proactive.
Absolutely. You
know, and in some cases, if it is reactive, it's reactive in a positive way where they're able to reestablish present focus, able to reestablish a mindset where they can be determined to change what happened or, you know, whatever it may be, but not, as you said, like throwing a cheap screen after the fact. That's not toughness.
And so if we teach blockout, we can demand and make kids accountable for blocking out. All right. If we say toughness and they don't know what that is, you're putting your kid in a pretty tough situation and you're being really unclear. And I think it's really important to define the word toughness. Because if you say, we're going to play the 8 toughest guys, I've heard that before. What the heck does that mean?
I know what it means. It usually means 3 or 4 of them are really good on offense.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know exactly what you're saying. But that's the other thing, is that what you're saying is important for players too, because we throw out words in practice all the time in a general way. Hey, we got to be tougher, or we got to rebound more, or we've got to put more effort into this. But do you really define that for your players? Because that's such a subjective term. That it's like, well, what does that mean in our program? What does being tough mean in our program? Here's the 4 things that it actually means. And if you do these or you display these, you're being tough. So that's what you're getting at.
And if a kid comes off the bench, Chris, and we say, listen, you're going to guard 14 when you go in. And the game plan for 14 has been, we are not helping on ball side penetration. Sure enough, he gets in the game. There's penetration to his side, and he takes a step towards a ball, which is all is needed by the guy he's guarding to catch it and score, right? First play. Now, that is an example of toughness to me. He is not engaged into the game. And you got a guy coming off the bench. He has to be able to respond and execute for you. So to me, that would be he's got a lack of toughness. So that would just be an example. So toughness is an anchor without a question. I want to talk about eyes for a second. I actually have a YouTube video, one of the videos on my YouTube channel, and I have over 100 videos on there. I think a good resource for coaches, but we worked on using our eyes this summer with the players that I had, and it was pretty interesting. Our eyes tell the defender a lot about what we anticipate doing. And because I'm so big on the 90%, okay, being able to use your eyes to tip off a player where the defender may think you're headed is big because they watch your eyes. I ask every player, how many of you in grade school played tag? And they all raise their hand, right? Everybody's played tag. Well, I say, if you can play tag and you understand the concept of tag, you can be a really good player off the ball. Well, why is that? And so then we demonstrate it. The player that is about to be tagged always what? He steps in a direction opposite of his eventual cut. Always. That's what they do. I said, if you can do that in basketball with the aid of screens and change of speed and direction, I said, holy smokes. Just by being able to use your eyes and change speed and direction like you do in tag, you can be a really good player on offense. It's those types of things, Chris, I think that adds to the clarity for kids of how to play, because they get tag. They may not get some terms and some fancy drills we run. And to me, that's an anchor that's really huge. And I won't go into the seven ways because that's available for the coaches.
A quick interruption to this week's episode to let you know what you're missing if you are not currently a member of BasketballImmersion.com. Basketball Immersion is one-stop shopping for video learning to stimulate your basketball coaching using evidence-based practices. Watch hundreds of videos covering BDT shooting, zero-second skill training, how we teach using small-sided games and a games approach to coaching, as well as team concepts and systems like trail trap, flow offense, two-sided fast break, and much, much more. NCAA, NBA, pro, high school, and youth coaches are amongst the thousands of coaches who are a part of our community. Go to basketballimmersion.com today to stimulate your basketball coaching.
No, I mean, again, and that, the 45 ways for mental toughness or the seven ways for this, I mean, that's probably another podcast, but it's a great analogy and an easy way, as you said, for kids to understand a concept. Any ways you can frame it in a way they understand is
right.
So, right. I think the next thing you got into in terms of anchors is roles.
One of the greatest things I ever heard about roles was put a role into a positive framework. Tell a kid, here's what we need you to do to have a positive impact on us winning this game or having a great season. Now, that's an empowering statement. Who wouldn't get turned on by that, hearing that? Because then you're like, with bated breath, you're like, what is it that he needs me to do that I'm good at? I love that. That is so empowering. A lot of times, though, we say, listen, we don't want you shooting the three. Okay. You need to bounce it and get to the rim. Defensively, we're going to put you on somebody that you can keep in front of you. And they're limiting and they're kind of negatively stated. So, again, my challenge, coaches, think about how you phrase your roles to kids. Because you know what? He's going to take what you just said verbatim to the dinner table that night. And if it's about, you can't shoot, you can't do this, you can't do that, I don't think that helps the situation at all. I'm a huge music fan. And one of my best stories with roles comes from a recent concert. In fact, Chris, I am so into how they build these monster stages for concerts and how they tear them down that I actually figured out a way to get hired by the Stagehands Union here in Central Iowa. And I work for a couple different companies and I actually do that work. As a hobby. And I'll tell you, it is amazing. You talk about like a crew that comes out in the morning at 8 o'clock when you bring all the stuff in off the trucks. Let's say there's six trucks. And I stand there in amazement. And I really listen carefully to, because there's always a production manager, stage manager, and then you have lighting, you have sound, you have all the different areas. And you get put into one of the areas and the communication from the stage director is unbelievable in terms of how fast and efficiently that stage will be put together. We're talking about some big stages. 100 feet by 60 is what we worked on this summer. That's a big stage. And I do that because everybody has a role. And these guys have a small amount of time. They may have traveled 8 hours, got up at 7, they're on the stage at 8, and they have local guys like myself who have to listen to and understand directions specifically. We're talking about pyrotechnics. We're talking about video screens. We're talking about some real stuff here. And I have been totally blown away in a couple situations, the lack of roles and the lack of direction. I didn't know who was in charge. And it's amazing, one show this summer, how it ever got done. But I'll tell you, this band, Florida Georgia Line, came in, and this guy that was in charge was unbelievable. I learned so much that night because he said, I was talking to him in the morning. He said, well, wait till loadout. He said, you know, bringing stuff in and setting it up, load in is always longer than loadout. He goes, we're shooting for 52 minutes tonight. And I looked at him like, okay, really? And you know what? It rained, and that put us behind. But that night, in 62 minutes, that thing was broken down to where there wasn't a speck on that stage. And this guy was amazing. And I thought, man, what coaches could learn and what I learned from these guys that put these monster productions together and have them torn down in less than an hour means they are really clearly disseminating goals to the guys that work for them. And I worked for the lighting guy that night, and he was so specific. There's no way you could screw up. Now, he had you hopping. He had you hopping. Believe me, I'm 61. I'm flying around. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this much longer, but I love the work. And I was blown away. But that's my story about roles.
Yeah, no, how interesting and how clearly defined roles make everyone work more efficiently and hopefully happier, right? And as you're saying, so. Coach, what's the top three?
The top three, Chris, comes from Gary Garner. I learned this from Coach Garner, a tremendous basketball coach, won a Division II national championship. And Coach Garner at Drake, I worked for him at Drake for a year, but he also had Mo Iba on his staff at Drake. And Mr. Iba used to come to practice. And Gary said, I've never been, there's not a game I've ever been more nervous for in my life than having Mr. Iba at one of my practices. But one of the things that came from that I learned from Gary was, he asked me one day, do you feel like you're an offensive or defensive coach? And like an idiot, like a young guy that felt like he had it all figured out, I said, I think I'm pretty good at both. And it's just like my hand was in the bear trap. It was over. And he came to me with, what are your non-negotiables? And what this is putting a puzzle together, really, is what it is. It is taking the game, he said. He said, you can have three things. If I give you a team and I give you three things, you're going to teach these three things better than anybody. You are going to make your guys totally, totally accountable for these because they're non-negotiables. There is no, absolutely no wiggle room whatsoever. Now, you only get three. And a wonderful picture story on this is a guy who spins plates on sticks, and he spins 10 of them to start with, and they're all going really good. And eventually a couple of them are going to wobble, and he goes down and tightens those up. And now there's three on the other end and one on the opposite end that are wobbling. Well, eventually plates are going to start to fall because he's trying to be the best at each plate, trying to keep them going at maximum speed. Well, if we do that in coaching, this goes back to the funnel we started with, I guess. If we try to be all things to all parts of the game, we're going to be average or maybe the master of nothing. You know, the master of all is the master of none. And as a coach, I would rather be really good and have my players be accountable at three areas and take my chances than teach in general during the week on all areas. Now, we got to cover all areas. I get that. But it's got to be water off a duck's back at some point on all the other parts other than your three. So I now call it the school bus rule. And I tell my buddies who have a top three, and almost everybody I know close in coaching has a top three, I say this yellow school bus rule is, when you go on the road, it could be at home too, but I just use the example, you go on the road, you play the game, win or lose, you get back in the bus. What I want you to do is do a quick inventory of your top three. Nobody, there's no feel good wins, but if your team did rebound, they took care of the ball, and your third one was, we got to the foul line and shot 10 more free throws than the other team. Let's just say that's a top three for a particular coach. And you can sit there in that school bus and say, yes, yes, and yes. Now, there are some maybe external things that happened that affected the fact that you did lose that game. But most of the time, you're going to win it. I think if you study the really good coaches, the successful coaches, that you will be able to, I bet you can find right off the bat, two out of the three. And this is the number one thing that I ever learned in coaching, is what Coach Garner taught me. And then my challenge to coaches is, what's your top three? And they want five or they want seven. I said, no, you can only have three. And it's gone as far, Chris, and this is really cool, that I've had coaches that have it printed and it's on the wall in their gym. And you can ask their players at any time, hey, what's the top three in this program? Defensive transition, take good shots, limit turnovers. Boom, they know. Now, is that what we're trying to do in coaching? I think it is.
Well,
and it is.
It's a great actionable thing.
Yes.
great actionable, practical thing and a great exercise. And I would challenge coaches to try that. And if you do, then you can obviously try and share it with Coach and I on Twitter too. That'd be fun.
Absolutely.
Did that and share their three with us. And
I have a list I'll share with you too of coaches I've asked and what they are. And there's such a range. It's really cool because everybody's different. And I'll make sure I send that to you. And I probably was going to say this at the end, but all of these things that I say, you know, 22 rules, 45 for toughness, the rule of top three, the whole thing, I will send out anything to anybody in any kind of quantity that you want. Believe me, I don't have a team anymore. I coach coaches. I would challenge anybody to have as much information as I have digitally and in paper and video, and take me up on it because I want to make sure that I share as much as I can. Chris, the rule of sticky, which is next.
Well, Coach, let's just say, like, we will make sure we'll share your information on the podcast notes and everything as well. And we'll make sure coaches can connect with you if they wish. So, the rule of sticky. So how to make things stick with your players and team.
Right. The rule of sticky fits into the top three because in order to make things stick, you know, we can say, well, you know, we've talked a lot about rebounding. How come we're not rebounding the ball? Well, you can talk about it all you want. Okay. Good luck. Other coaches will say, well, this year we're really going to emphasize toughness with the ball. Okay, great. You can emphasize it as much as you want. Okay, you'll get the same degree of results, I think. If you talk about it, you might get a little bit back. If you emphasize it, you might get a little bit more than that back. Okay, if you make it a non-negotiable, which fits into the top three like we just talked about, you're going to get back really, really close to what you want. So if you want to become the best rebounding team in your league this year, defensive rebounding team, you must commit to it totally, totally. So the rule of sticky is you can talk about it, emphasize it, or make it a non-negotiable. That is low, medium, and then the highest level of accountability. Okay? We are, as coaches, we get what we tolerate. And if we talk about stuff, that's what we're going to get. Yeah. The team we put out there on Friday is the team that we've allowed to be the entire week. They're just not going to turn into a championship team and a great rebounding team. And here's another example for you. Another way to remember it is talk about things as a glue stick. Emphasizing things is Elmer's glue. And the non-negotiable is super glue. And super glue is going to stick.
Nice.
That's the rule of sticky.
Yeah, coaches love analogies. So there's some good stuff that we'll all remember and stick with us as we move forward. So, no, this is good stuff, Coach. Free shooting ideas for players.
Yeah, real quick on this. You walk in the gym and you watch players shoot. And this summer, I started a thing. I said, you can shoot, you can walk in the gym, because usually what do we tell them? Don't walk in the gym, get a ball, and start firing threes. And I say, you can walk in the gym and fire any shot you want. You can shoot a half-court shot if you want. I don't care. I said, here's the rule. When you free shoot, supposedly, and working on your game, or maybe you're in a group of guys, if you miss, you have to move closer on the next shot. If you miss that, you have to move closer on the next shot. If you miss that, you move closer. And here's the idea. I think it'll increase their concentration when they do have time to take shots. Because they're thinking, oh, how many threes are short? My gosh. 70%. I mean, if they're not really concentrating, so they miss a three, they're not going to shoot another three. They're going to shoot an elbow jumper. If they miss that, they're not going to shoot a 10 footer. And I guarantee you, they'll be concentrating better. And the shot will mean more because they want to work their way out. It's just an inside out. It's just kind of a creative way to get guys thinking. I would use this with young players like crazy, Chris, just because they're typically shooting a little further out than where they should be.
Well, and it's not just about that. It's also about confidence that, you know, you move in, you make, you move out, right? Like you're building back your confidence and your belief in your shot. And we know that you don't lose your shooting ability at a lot of the upper levels. You lose your confidence in your shooting ability. So that's part of this process. So that's great. Coach, I think we're on number 11, coach yourself.
Coach yourself is all about the concept of, I love saying that, okay, I want you to think of your coach right now. Everybody think about your coach, okay? And as you sleep at night, I want you to think about him not sleeping. I want you to think about him watching tape. I want you to think about him making notes. You have no idea the time and the importance that this game is to him. Now, you can really help your coach. Is there anybody here who wouldn't really like to help their coach? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? What you're asking him to do most of the time is to coach you and the other 14 guys every possession, every pass, every screen, every blockout of every minute of every practice. I said, no wonder he goes home and can't sleep. I go, think about it. What if we ask you to do that? I said, so how can you help your coach? You have to coach yourself. If there's something you know about basketball, you know, knowledge of something is great. The execution of knowledge is where it's really at. That's where you win. I said, if you go to the back of the line and you just, you know, forget about the fact you're even at practice, okay, you're helping your team lose and you're not becoming better as a player. Stay locked in. Listen to everything. I'm just giving you an example of what coach yourself is. So what does that mean? Well, that means that there's so much great direction that goes on during practice. And usually players filter most of it out because it's not directed at them. And so, like, we'll use a name and I'll say, Chris, you didn't see the ball. That's why that baseline drive went right by you and the guy laid it in. Now, when I said Chris, 14 guys disengaged, I'm saying. Maybe not 14. If you have a really good team, not that many. But let's just say 14 right. guys disengaged because I said Chris. And then it's a one-on-one deal. And how many times this happened? Then you take 4 minutes explaining it, at, you know, kind of getting angry a little bit, maybe setting it up, showing it, demonstrating. Then you go back into it, and some guy subs in who is disengaged, and you got two guys doing the same thing. And that's so frustrating. And so I did this summer. And, you know, you can tell, I mean, I love to be creative. I do off-the-wall stuff. When the players came in, I had 22 players come in this summer. And I had a little piece of tape with already pre-printed with each player's name. And so let's say Chris came in. Let's say you walked in, you're one of my players. And I said, I want you to grab the other 21 names other than your name and put each piece of tape one by one on your shirt. Of course, they look at me like, okay, coach. RB, whatever you got, you know, and they did. And we go out there and I sent you a picture of one of the kids, I think. And so they've got 21 pieces of tape on their shirt. Well, their shirt says Tim, Bill, Tyrone, you know, Jackson, Will, all the names. What's my point? My point is if you want to become a better player, you have to coach yourself. You have to be engaged all the time. How do you do that? When you hear a name that's on your shirt, because whatever name's on your shirt, that is you. So if I tell Chris, now listen, you have Tyrone on your shirt. If I say, Tyrone, come here, let's talk about this. Then your name is Tyrone. And physically, I want guys to actually get close enough to be able to hear what I tell Tyrone. And it's like a beehive moving around the floor. And there is no exception to this. I won't allow it. And so whatever I'm telling Tyrone, then they have to be able to hear. What a great number of opportunities in a practice for players to learn, because I'm directly talking to him, but I'm really talking the game. I'm talking to my team about how we can get better by doing this.
Well, and of course, how often do players mess up something that was already coached within a practice? I mean, and again, I'll be honest, I think that's one of the biggest frustrations for coaches.
It is.
Is when you coach something and then the next player messes up the exact same thing you just spent time talking or teaching about. So,
no question. Unfortunately, I won't be able to talk about in the time we have about an unbelievable experience I had in coaching Steve Kerr at the University of Arizona. But in these notes, one of the things I always picked up on Steve is, and even in a year that he had to sit out because he got injured, he was always close to what was going on. And I had seen him move from the backcourt to the front court several times so he could listen to what was going on. You think about that. You're down on one end and there's instruction on the other end. And you're like, well, he must be talking to the offense because I'm on defense. And he would work his way up so he could hear what was going on. If he didn't hear, I remember him asking a number of times, hey, what was that? What are we doing there? Now think about that. And then I heard him talking to his teammates about the very same thing later on. Now, you talk about a coach on the floor. And obviously we know he was a coach on the floor. We just didn't know at what level in 1986. But what a great story about a guy who's one of the brightest minds, you know, that we have in our game, and what a tremendous player given the ability that he had. He made it work for, I think, 13 years. So that's my great story on Coach Yourself. And Steve was the epitome of being able to coach himself.
Well, it brings up two thoughts for me. The first is, how often do our players in practice, like you said, like say we go multiple trips to the floor, we go down to the other end, and then the players that are off stay down the far end, mm-hmm. right? And we always try and encourage our players to follow the play on the sideline so that they can, as you said, they can get all that feedback. But the second part is, and this is probably the greatest compliment I could get from a coach who observes one of my practices, is that they notice my players coaching each other in practice.
That's awesome.
Right? Like if they notice that, that means my players are doing it, first of all, which is the key part of all that. Then that, for me, is what we're trying to get to, and what we're trying to get to constantly is this coach yourself concept, that everyone's engaged and focused. Well, they're active participants in each other's learning and in their own development as well. So
no, great compliment.
These are great stories.
Make you feel good. Yeah.
No, absolutely. So, and
the last thing, Chris,
this is number 12 for coaches following at home.
Number 12, anchor. I just call it enjoy. And I am saddened at times when I go see a high school game, and I understand the business element of the NBA and even, you know, the college game. But when I go to high school games, even college games, I want to see players enjoying the experience. And, you know, I don't see it a lot of times. And I'm wondering where it is. Why are you even out? Why do you go through this? You know, and coaches can be negative, but, you know, most of the coaches are in it for the kids and themselves. Secondly, where is the enjoyment factor? Where are the smiles? Where are the high fives? Where are the, come on, man, let's go. And start a defensive chant on the bench if you have to. I don't care. There are so many, when I talk to teams, high school and college, one of the first things I talk about, Chris, is how many kids do you imagine are in a wheelchair right now in our country that would love to be playing basketball? And then I'm quiet for about 15 seconds. And we lose the idea that it's such a privilege to play sports, to be in the band, to be in the debate team, to do all these extracurricular things. And the lessons from sports, as we all know, it is a vein that runs through our life unbelievably. Because I then talk about friends. And I said, you know, in 5 years, if I ask you what your high school team's record was when you were junior, you won't remember. I know these games are life and death right now. I understand that. And your coach sometimes will make it feel like it's life and death too. But in a bigger picture, guys, okay, in a bigger picture, in your life, for the next 60 years or whatever, your life is going to be based on relationships. Look around here. There might be a guy in this group who, when you're 42 years old, you have to call at 3 a.m. and share some really terrifically horrible news. And they're going to come to your aid. And I speak just like this too. And a lot of this comes from personal experiences I've had. And the reason that I wrote a book about how we respond to adversity really can set your life up, either in a negative way or a positive way, because we all have adversity. And they look around, and it's like, oh yeah, man, that, you know, that game Friday is important. We're all trying to win, but maybe there's a bigger thing going on here. There's enjoyment of what we're doing since we're putting in the time. There's the friendships that we have standing right next to us. And there's just the idea of gratitude. Some kids can't play. They're either not good enough. They're physically challenged. Maybe they're mentally challenged. Maybe they got in an accident. They're in a wheelchair. I always think of Landon Turner. You know, he was such a celebrated player at Indiana back in the 70s. And then he got hurt, and he was at those games in a wheelchair. That picture of Landon Turner, I will never forget. And I get almost emotional thinking about that, because he wanted to play so bad. And that would be my 12th anchor. And I would also reflect that back on coaches too. Coaches, why are you coaching? If you have kids at home, if you have a family at home, they're always going to be your family. Okay. You can coach or not coach. That's up to you. And I know it probably sounds pretty hypocritical coming from me, because I was a worker, but I always challenge coaches, because where's the fun? Where's the smiles? Where are the lessons in life that we're teaching our players? and where's your family? And hug them, hold them dearly. They're going to grow fast. And your coaching is just part of you as a person and part of your entire life. But there's a lot more to it. Relationships rule, though. There's no question about that, if there's one thing I've learned.
Well, it comes back to, as you said, like giving your players permission to have fun in basketball practice.
Yes.
Like it's amazing that when I go work summer camps and say I'll get 80 kids in a camp and I have to give that speech. And it's amazing to me that I have to give that speech. And as you're saying, there's something, you know, out of whack if you have to give a speech at basketball camp that says, listen, you guys can smile, you can laugh, you can enjoy it. Like, come on, like this is basketball camp. Like it's supposed to be fun. This is not supposed to be anything other than that. And we define fun. I mean, it's you improving. It's you competing. It's not just frivolous.
Right.
This is fun.
Yes. So
no, you're absolutely right. That's a huge thing. And, you know, as I said, I mean, all these things are so practical and, you know, the stories and the analogies and all that are just wonderful. I'm so grateful for you taking some time to share some of these stories. And, you know, I know some of them have even stimulated some ideas in my mind about how I can phrase things differently to my players. So it's wonderful stuff. So, Coach, that's where can people find you online? And tell them a little quickly about your book as well.
Sure. My website is myname.coach. I thought it was pretty cool that they came up with the extension coach instead of it's one of the new extensions. So I decided to use it. It's Randy Brown.coach.
That's perfect.
And actually, there will be all of my coaching information. There will be speaking information, and there'll be information on my book, which actually is on the homepage. In terms of basketball, other than being at clinics and doing instruction and things and all of the sharing that I do of the game, I specifically for 11 years have been mentoring coaches. And if there's an interest by any of our coaches out there who want to know either, number one, how to become a better coach, but specifically how to become a college coach. And it's the greatest question ever, because you can go to college to be an accountant and spend money and spend a lot of money for 4 years of school, or you can become a college coach where there is no school, there is no manual. Fortunately, I started a program 11 years ago, and I've helped over 125 guys to reach their goals in coaching, most of them at the college level. And I love it. It's just an unbelievable experience for me. And I teach networking. That's the number one thing that I teach, because to get into college basketball, people don't get jobs, I say. People get people jobs. And so I have a proven system. Elite Coach Mentoring is what it's called. I would love to talk to anybody. In fact, you can sign up for a phone consultation on my website very easily. My book, Chris, is not a book about me, although I am the main subject in the book. It's about an accumulation of adversity that has occurred in my life, and it comes from two places. Number one, it comes from things that I've done that's created adversity, and it's just adversity life's created in my life. And not to get into specifics, you can read a lot about the book if you go to the website, but it's about adversity, and it's something we all face. My worst decisions and my worst choices, Chris, were because I didn't handle adversity correctly. I didn't respond the right way. And it's often said that adversity is the greatest ally that we have, because we get stronger through adversity. And I disagree with that. That's one of the things that can happen. There are some horrible, life-changing things that can happen if we don't handle adversity correctly. Quick example is the loss of a child. In our family, we actually went through the loss of 2 4-year-old children. Well, when I made a decision not to grieve, not to lean on my higher power, my faith, and to do some things that were hidden, okay, that felt good at the time, but not were not the right response to adversity, then, you know, I ended up just causing more pain for my family. That's what the book is about. Adversity is not a magic pill, but it does give us a platform and an opportunity to make the right decision and therefore strengthen ourselves, or to make some wrong choices. So, and that's my calling out to people. And as much as I love basketball, as you can tell from getting to know you a little bit, I'm about this message much more, because it's a life message. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share that, because that's a very personal thing. And the book is very personal and has tremendous lessons in it.
Well, and I appreciate that and appreciate your honesty and your openness and all your sharing for coaches. And coaches, please, obviously you enjoy this podcast and get some information from it and go check out Coach's website as well and follow him on Twitter and connect with him as well. And,
yes,
you know, a great mentor. And as you said, lots of life lessons and yes, basketball lessons as well. So thanks, Coach. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Share the game, right, Chris?
Absolutely. Share the game.
Love it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.